Here.
Erner.
Here.
Fabiano. Gavaris. Green.
Here.
Hansett.
Here.
Heppner. Hewitt. Levine. Litz.
Here.
Lopez. Maloney.
Here.
Nolan.
Here.
Petit.
Here.
Roberts. Ronk. Sperry.
Here.
Stewart.
Here.
And you should tell.
Here.
There are 14 present and 9 absent.
Thank you. So as I think you all know, we're here for a special informational meeting on the Penrose Project on Golden Hill. We have representatives of Penrose with us today, Will DiBella, Jonah Riconati, and Dylan Sammons, and Michael Berg from Family of Woodstock is here as well. Before I hand it over to them for the presentation, I'm going to give the floor to the county executive for a moment, just to speak to us on the project for 1 minute, or a couple minutes.
So, thank you, Abe. So, this is a project. I mean, it's not my initiative. I inherited this project. We inherited this project, but it's one that I really believe in, and it's why I just wanted to take a moment to address you all before the presentation. We are in a dire situation in our county with the housing crisis. It is only growing worse. In June and July alone, the number of people needing emergency housing grew by close to 100 people, which is a dramatic increase on top of the 300 to 400 folks that we are normally trying to place in emergency housing. Many of these people are families. The duration of stay in emergency housing has become shockingly long. Average length of stay for families in that system is now 19 months compared to 4 months in 2021. Beyond the terrible human toll this takes, this increase in demand also increases financial costs to the county. And truly the only sustainable and really humane solution for us as a county is to expand the supply of housing and permanent options for people to move into. And I believe that the Golden Hill project would be a huge step forward, especially for, you know, the city of Kingston. Over half of the unhoused residents that our county serves in the emergency housing are from Kingston. The project is going to create 160 units of housing at deeply affordable rents with support services on site. Half of the units will be reserved for seniors, the other half for families at 30% to 60% of AMI, and a portion of those units reserved specifically for survivors of domestic violence. There will be daycare on site, playgrounds, a community garden, and access to public transportation and trails. And this housing is going to be green. It's going to be all electric, and a lot of the energy use is going to be offset by an on-site solar array. It is our best near-term solution to reducing the need for emergency housing. And I believe it's the only project like in process at this level of affordability, and it is truly what we need. So I just wanted to share some of that context, because this is like every night I'm like kept up worrying about the emergency housing situation. I just visualize that project as I'm riding my bike down the trail, and I just think it's going to make a huge, huge contribution to this, to solving this problem. So I want to turn it over to Dylan and come on up to give his presentation. And thank you for Family of Woodstock for being our local partner, and we'll be providing services. And have a great session. Thank you.
So I'm going to thank you, County Executive. I'm going to hand it over to Dylan for the presentation. I'm inclined to step down so that I can see the presentation, but that would only work if we're going to hold legislative questions until the end. I don't know, how long is the presentation?
I think we should get through the presentation in 20 to 30 minutes.
All right. So you know what? I'm going to stay up here just in case. We're going to go with the concept that we'll try to hold things to the end, but if it's running longer and it makes more sense to ask as we're going, we'll see. But right now we're going to plan to hold things to the end, but I'll stay just in case. For the questions, this is a special informational meeting, so legislators are allowed to ask questions. This is not for public questions, and there is no public comment period in this meeting. So just to let everyone know at the start, I'm going to hand it over to you, but I'll stay put for right now.
Cool. And look, we can always recycle through slides as questions come up, but it's really great to see all of you again and some of you for the first time. My name is Dylan Salmons. I'm one of the partners at Penrose, and I'm the partner who oversees our New York City and state pipeline of affordable housing production. It's what we do every single day. It is the focus of my waking and sleeping moments, and so I really enjoy coming up here and getting to speak about projects that are as, you know, kind of cool, quirky, and complicated as something like this. We've got a really good team of people on our side of the bench that includes Jonah and Will, and obviously my partner Michael Berg, who's going to be one of the long-term owners of this new community. So with no further ado, why don't we hop right in? A little bit of housekeeping. We're going to cover the background of the project. We're going to talk about what's been happening to date. We're going to cover some of the salient pieces of this, some of its strengths, challenges, opportunities, and then we'll wrap it up with kind of where we're headed, and we'll open the floor for Q&A. Who's got the slide clicker? Have a hard button I can hit?
I'll figure it out. Why don't you keep on talking?
Okay. Well, everybody has a printout of this thing. I am on the slide that's got the building blocks. It talks about about the Ulster County Housing Plan. So way back when, in 2020, on or around the time that we were responding to the RFP that was issued, Evelyn Wright and the team at Ulster County, you know, under Pat, put together what I thought was a really phenomenal inventory and analysis about the housing problem. You know, specific to some things that are national at the moment in time, you know, things we couldn't really even think about that would come into the fray with COVID, but was genuinely investigative in its report of what Ulster County's needs were. Those building blocks gave us, as people who are focused in housing work, a lot of confidence and excitement, frankly, to respond to an RFP that we thought was ambitious as this one, between the housing production, on-site energy, and Green New Deal at the time, which were fun and exciting buzzwords that people really hadn't put a framework to, and ultimately to work with a really forward-thinking and, you know, sort of solution-focused instrumentality of the government. So focus on, you know, factors that influence housing, strategies to increase supply, and a real community-driven conversation, which, you know, I hope that we have held the torch in a way that makes everybody proud to this point in Golden Hill. Recommendations that came out of this that you'll see repeated through the project that we'll cover here on the next slide is to really find a way to move with urgency. As County Executive covered, you know, a growth of 100 households at this problem, increasing nightly stay and duration, you know, it's really about finding a near-term solution. I'd love to say it's an immediate-term solution, but generally nothing in my world is ever really fully immediate. The arc of development is long and difficult, but, you know, the idea that we can move diligently through the process and work towards solutions that can happen as quick as possible are what this is all about, and that's really what landed on the jail site. You know, the timeline, even though it feels like for some of us we've been at this for a really long time, relative to a 165-unit project that has a, you know, stack of financing that's about, you know, the length of my forearm, has actually been moving pretty quickly and with a lot of great leadership locally. The RFP was released in 2020. We worked through our partnership and land disposition agreement through the balance of 2020 and spent a real hulking period of time in the shadows of COVID a little bit and some stuff out as publicly as we could be, working through design and community engagement. We held over four different community engagement charrettes, some of them in the Restorative Justice Center, which were really well attended even during the COVID period. We went through almost nine public planning and approvals process to focus on site plan. We'll cover some of the features of this site plan, but they are in no way textbook or vanilla to affordable housing production. The number of playgrounds, the typology of playgrounds, the circulation, the connection back to public transit. There's nothing that's not aspirational about what this project started with as an RFP and is now headed towards its 90% set for construction documentation, the reality, manifestation of what gets built out there in the field. It's all preserved. So that's been a really exciting thing, and kudos to Will and his team for keeping them there. In July of 2022, we received the SECR negative declaration, which allowed for the site plan approval to happen in the fall of 2022. And that's really launched us into where we are today in terms of construction documentation and progress. I'm happy to report that, you know, we've got a few challenges left in front of us to cover in terms of filling the final financial gap of this project. But we've been locking arms very closely with HCR, and we're hopeful to be in a place to start construction in earnest in the first quarter of next year, which is doing pretty good in terms of our initial projections. So what sits behind that, and, you know, what is the team? So, you know, I'll talk a little bit in a second about why this this developer sort of structure is important in affordable housing finance and construction. But generally speaking, you know, the creation of affordable housing is focused on the rallying of support locally to meet community need. It is drumming up an investment partner whose focus is really on not the economics that have come out of the rental side of the equation, but on the federal low-income housing tax credit and a steady sort of stream of those credits over time, preserved by consistent occupancy, compliance, and good oversight of the physical asset. And it's a development team that can, you know, that can work in terms of operating and managing a property. And so Penrose brings that side of the equation to this partnership. But in a project like this one, which has supportive housing as well, has a daycare facility, has four different tiers of income restrictions, we're not alone. And so, you know, at the beginning of this project, when we found family or we found each other, there was a really great synergy there. I mean, in our 50-year period, for the last 20-plus of them, I've been there for 10 of, we've been developing and drinking the Kool-Aid of the projects that have supportive housing partnerships in them, so much so that we created our own supportive housing silo within Penrose. And so to be working with Michael's team, who will have long-term majority ownership of the Golden Hill facility at the end of the day, 51% of the managing member, to be on site with case managers as an operator of the facility on the daycare side and be working hand in glove with, you know, with our management company is probably the best version of a partnership that we could hope for. So what does Penrose and family do for the folks who are coming to the aid of raising financing for this deal? During pre-development stage, your affordable housing developer is, you know, rallying support locally around housing finance and what housing can and cannot do. Housing can become affordable. Housing can address issues of housing stability. It can address issues of income inequality. It can address issues of education and access to healthy food. And how do we work with Albany to try and keep those things coming through our housing program? We have spent a lot of time trying to fund investment, whether that's through grant dollars or whether that is through private monies, through banks and through investors. That's where we're spending a lot of time. We cover the nut to get to closing. And so the dozens of professionals, architects, engineers, et cetera, that come into this project over the three-year period, those are folks that need to be paid. Those are folks that have families and need their livelihood to continue maintaining. And a well-financed development partner does that. And then generally, we are project managing and running a very tight schedule that is, you know, 500 rows long of every activity that leads you to, you know, cutting or breaking that ground and shoveling the dirt away. And so that project management, that expertise that comes with having, you know, gone through several hundred of these projects and knowing where the stumbling blocks are, that's the value that we're bringing. During construction and into the delivery, being like the actual leasing of units, you go from being the paymaster before there's any other partners in to providing a full-on completion guarantee for the total value of a project. And so a project of this size has a pretty large completion guarantee of over $80 million. That's an uncapped guarantee that your developer partner on behalf of the tax credit investor has to provide. There's oversight of the construction and financing, and so every month there is a problem on the site. It is unavoidable. Construction is an at-risk industry, and so we are troubleshooting unknown things below ground. We are troubleshooting utility coordination and delay. We're troubleshooting access to materials and labor. And then each month, we are coupling that with withdrawal requests from banks and investors to try and offset the trouble. And so that's a constant activity, even through construction. And then during lease-up, when it's fast and furious and units are coming online and people are really excited to be in new homes, that is where we are spending a yoke of our time because, again, the investment thesis in affordable housing is not so much the rents that's coming off them, but it's the creation of that low-income housing tax credit, which only really takes effect once a qualifying household is in the unit. And so we're working as closely as we can with supportive services, property management, and the investment team to make sure that that is happening because at the end of the day, the viability financially of the project is that steady stream of credits, and so we're focused there. And we're also providing guarantees around the timing of that leasing. And then long-term ownership and accountability. I think accountability really sums this up. These are projects that throw off only a couple $100 per unit per year. Demystified, right? To operate on that kind of a shoestring budget for the 15-year period that the tax credit compliance is going means routine grooming and pruning of the operations, evaluating what's working, investing very, very specifically in capital improvements that maintain operational sustainability and keep that project through that year 15 into the place where it needs to, in year 20, start to really think about its freshening up. And as a company that has over 300 of these communities going and a lot of them aged in that 30 to 40 year period, that's where we're spending a lot of our thinking. So that's what we're doing as a development team. That's the value that developers bring to this partnership, both on Michael's side and on my own. And so I thought that would be helpful to demystify it a little bit. Will, you want to talk about project goals and walk us through?
Yeah, happy to.
Great.
Hello, everybody. My name is Will Devella. I am a project manager, lead project manager on the Golden Hill project for Penrose. I've been working on the project for the past 2 years with Dylan and Michael from the start, and I'm going to drill a little bit down on the specifics of the project. I think we're going to hold questions for the end, but please, mark up on your sheet the question you have, and we'll go back and flip through slides. Project goals. A lot of these came to us from the county team. These goals were outlined, and one thing we were told in the interview was the ideas for this project were put into the RFP so that someone could come build exactly what the county wanted out of this project for them. And that means intergenerational housing, places for seniors to age in place and live comfortably, but also families, and create a real mixed intergenerational community. It means a mix of incomes, providing deeply affordable units with paired supportive services, but also providing senior affordable housing and housing for families at moderate incomes as well, and creating a real mixed income, what we think is a healthy community. Open space. There's clearly a lot of open space up there. It was a goal of this project from the start to take advantage of that. Not only that, but the views over into the Catskills. So we spent a lot of time making sure that our design optimized that, and there are views from the senior building where people can hang out and enjoy themselves, but also from all areas of the community. Commercial and local programming. While it is in downtown, it is a little bit off of downtown, and it's important that we felt to give people a reason to come to the community. That's why from the start we expected to have some sort of commercial footprint here to bring people who didn't necessarily live here have a reason to come up to the Golden Hill. And that's why we put a daycare facility that's going to be open to the public and operated by Family of Woodstock that'll bring some traffic into the facility and create kind of a healthy, moving, multimodal community. In addition to bringing people for the daycare, we're going to bring in multiple forms of transportation. The county has worked with bringing a UCAT stop to the site, and we've made sure that there are physical sidewalk connections so people can walk down and access the community as well. And finally, accessing the trail network and views we've talked about, but another critically important piece of this is we wanted to bring an absolutely standout building when it came to sustainability and green infrastructure. This project is going to be 100% electric. It is ready to be a net zero community, and with this solar system that we'll be discussing later today, it will be fully net zero. It is really an incredible community. It's going to be a highly efficient building and an incredible place to live, and we're proud of that, and we think that this can be the first project, hopefully, of many in the Housing Action Plan moving forward and something we can point to as a success story. Taking a closer look at what that means, this is an overview top-down site plan. I'm going to kind of walk through it. We have a video to show, so I'll go through this quickly, and then kind of walk through in the video. But Golden Hill Drive is up there to the upper right. That's how you enter the community, and then we have a loop road. If you head to the right, you have the senior building. It's a four-story building of 80 units of affordable senior housing, looking out over the Catskills. In there, we have our management office for the community, but also supportive services office staffed by Family of Woodstock, which is going to provide services to frail elderly individuals living in the senior building, but also victims of domestic abuse and violence as well, which will be spread out to the rest of the community. Moving around, we have a collection of townhouses, two or three stories. Those are really 360-degree design buildings set amongst a park and a central green, other amenities, looking out over the hills as well. And then to the south of the site, a four-story family building that'll provide, you know, affordable and mixed-income housing as well. And then as you find your way around the loop out to the front is the community building, which has a mix of residential amenities, the community room, fitness center, but also the daycare right at the front of the head site, so people can pull in and then drop their kids off and come back out. And why don't I try to explain a little bit better in video? All right, we got the sound here. So here we are coming up Golden Hill Drive. On your left is the daycare facility and the community room. Some mailboxes on the right for people of the townhouses. Making our way around the loop road here, you see one of our first townhouse buildings. Again, these are 360-degree buildings with entrances in the front and back. In the front, in the middle of the view, is the senior building. 80 units of senior housing. That setback there provides a roof deck for people to look out over the mountains. We'll have rocking chairs up there and a place for people to relax. You can start to see on the left and right here some outdoor fitness equipment. We have outdoor fitness equipment for people of multiple ages, young children, but also elderly, so they can spend time outside for exercise. The front of our senior building with the management office, and on the left, the Family of Woodstock Future Supportive Services office. You can start to see the solar system on the building arrays here. We'll have one on each building roof. In total, the solar system will defer the entire electric cost to the community, making it a net zero community. Coming into view now is the second mid-rise building for families and individuals. If you head down to the right there, there'll be a connection to the Empire State Trail, which will have winding through the woods and provide a nice gravel overlay. We're going to turn now into the center of the community and walk towards the central green. You can again start to see some of the outdoor fitness equipment. This is for children of younger ages and the middle ages. This is starting to wrap up as we get closer back to the front of the community. Here we have our central green amongst the townhouses. And you can see in the foreground there, the back of the community building, including the outdoor community room, which will have a nice deck, and also the fitness room on the right. Hopefully that added a little bit of life to the site down plan. I think that's all. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, so...
I have a few more slides for you, actually.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Sorry. How are we doing on time?
Good.
About half an hour? All right, I want to speak a little bit about affordability, community input to date, then wrap up with schedule and financing.
Can we hold them to the end, just or do you want to, you're afraid you'll forget it? Okay.
Financing, so who's gonna live here? I have two slides here. First one is on overall income ranges for people in the community. Second one is in who's gonna live in the building. So HUD classifies affordable housing by several different classifications, one of which is extremely low income, which is the categories in the yellow. Next, very low income in the green. Low income in the blue, up to 80% of area median income. And then moderate income, which takes us from 80 to 130%. So for a family of one, a single household, that extremely low income is a family is either making nothing or up to about $20,000 a year. And that goes up to our top tier, the blue, up to about $50,000 a year. Now, a family of four, that'd be $0 to $28,000. And then again, our top tier in the blue takes us up to about $76,000 for a family of four. So that is the range of the people and the incomes of who is going to be living here. And you can see that in the breakdown of the units here. Again, those colors are the same as the last slide, with the yellow covering the extremely low income. Those are individuals in supportive housing or extremely low incomes. The green, the very low income. And blue, low income. So primarily, this is a affordable housing complex providing deeply affordable and supportive housing, but also a mix of incomes with workforce at a significant discount to market. Next, talking about community input, I think, you know, this was mentioned at the start. We had a number of community meetings, and some of the things that came out of that was the need for commercial space, including potentially a daycare, which family is going to take at the front of the site. There was significant discussion about bringing a street light to Route 32 and a gate at Glen Street. Both of those requirements were put in place through the public approvals process, and both the gate and the street light will be constructed as part of the project. Next, the UCAP bus stop. People discussed a lot about bringing public transportation to the site, and that's something that's going to happen in our collaboration with the county. Bringing physical connections to the site as well, so people can walk down to the community. We will be connecting this community physically with sidewalks down to the town, and also to the Empire State Trail system. And finally, making sure that there was enough outdoor amenities for all, given the location of the community, making sure we made the most of the site. And what's come out of that input is the benefits we see here, which is 164 units of 30-year regulatory affordable housing with nonprofit ownership. It's going to be 100% electric building with zero energy ready. It'll bring a lot of solutions that came out of the public approvals process. We're going to commit to 20% of construction contracts and 50% of construction hires coming to local businesses and workers. We're going to bring a new daycare and commercial facility to the community. And will provide greater than $1 million upfront revenue to the city. Switching now to financing, and then I'll touch on schedule before we close up. This is a unique project, as Dylan and the executive mentioned up front. It is aspirational. There are a lot of components of this that go above and beyond your typical project, and with that comes challenges. One of the most significant one is we are outside of what's called the qualified census tract, which is a significant benefit for affordable housing projects, and I have a map of that on the next page. But essentially provides a big boost to what you can size in those low-income housing tax credits that Dylan was discussing before, and is fairly typical for projects of this size to have. And we've known that this was a limitation of the site from the beginning and a challenge that we were going to have to confront. And I could talk a little bit about how we've done that and address that. Another considerable cost is the spike in costs across the board since we started development in 2020. I think everybody's seen this in their own lives. Mortgage rates, insurance premiums, construction costs, all up somewhere between 20 to 30% over that same period, has been a real challenge as we've been trying to bring this thing to fruition. And finally, it's just a significant property with a lot of space and a lot of lands to develop. That brings a lot of cost. So it is a large property, but we knew that from the start, and we've been prepared. Taking a look here is the most significant portion, which is the qualified census tract. Looking here in the purple, you see a number of red little houses. Those are all the affordable housing properties developed in the city of Kingston in the last 15 years. As you can see, they are all within the purple qualified census tract areas, while Golden Hill, the greenhouse in the bottom left, well outside of it. Which presents a significant financial challenge for us in that being within that purple is about $7 million benefit to us in project financing. Which takes us to where we stand today without that benefit. This $80 million project is a significant undertaking. Something, though, that we're doing across the state, and we feel confident in our ability to bring this to fruition. It includes a mix of financing sources, working with the state's Housing Finance Agency and Homes and Community Renewal, who finance affordable housing throughout the state. And the tax credit equity there, sort of in the middle, is the low-income housing tax credits that Dylan mentioned at the front that we'll bring an investor in to pay and purchase for. As we currently stand, there's about a $3 million financing gap of the project, and in the bottom right, you can see some of the strategies we've taken to address that. In the past 2 weeks, we've submitted $25 million worth of financing applications to the state, which would hopefully more than address that $3 million gap. With that, I can say that a $3 million gap on an $8 million project is well within the norm of where a project should sit at this point in time when you think about it on a percentage basis, and we feel comfortable in our ability to reach that and bridge that gap in the months to come as we work towards construction closing. But I'd be happy to answer any questions on any of these specific sources that come up. Remaining schedule, as I said, we're aiming to start construction in the beginning of next year. We've worked through community engagement, schematic design, the public approval process, the demolition is done and complete, the site is ready for new construction. And really the past few months have been about developing detailed construction drawings, which is a time-consuming effort. It takes upwards of a year. We're getting towards the end of that and should be ready towards the end of the year to finalize things, finalize the financing that was just shown on the last page, and start our work. And with that, I just want to say, everyone, thank you for the opportunity to come here and talk a little bit about the project, answer your questions, and hopefully, continue a line of communication moving forward. We'll pause there for questions.
Thank you. I'm going to start with Legislator Green.
Yeah, you've said many times on net zero, but I didn't hear the total between rooftop and what will this project, what's the demand that this project is going to put onto the energy system? Because I can't put those pieces together. And I do want to say that I had asked that the Golden Hill facility be deconstructed rather than demolished, and I was told about asbestos and whatever. There are ways to do that. So I'm skeptical. I'm always pretty skeptical, but we're in a major climate crisis. So could you please focus just on that for now?
Sure. The award of the financing for the solar system was a significant moment for this project and presents an incredible opportunity to turn what this community could be with zero energy ready to actually net zero, whereby we won't be producing any demand on the electric system. That is a huge improvement for the property and maybe, an incredible opportunity.
Maybe I'm not hearing you. I asked very specifically how much, what the demand is, mm-hmm. and what the solar that is currently planned.
It's about it's a 700
kilowatts or megawatts.
It's about a 700 kilowatt system.
70?
700 kilowatts.
700 kilowatts. And that's both for demand and generation?
It'll be demand generated on site and will be sized to the demand for of the facility.
All right. Whatever.
Yep.
Thank you.
Legislator Nolan.
Thank you very much. You end your timeline with construction starts. What construction phase period are you anticipating, and when, if this project went straight through, when might we have housing available for people?
Absolutely. We hope to start in the first quarter of next year, and it's an 18-month construction period, year and a half. Upon that, we'll be ready for lease-up, and people will start moving in right away. We expect about 10 months for lease-up.
Okay. Thank you.
Legislator Criswell.
Yeah, can you talk a little bit about parking spaces, the numbers compared to number of units?
Sure. I don't have that figure off the top of my head, but I can tell you that the planning board did review the number of parking spots that we proposed and was approved. I can't tell you exactly, though, Peter, so.
Could we make, would it be okay to get that answer sent over later?
Absolutely.
Happy
Great,
to.
Thank you. Great, thank you. Legislator Maloney?
Did this, so we're helping out with the solar, did that open up? The fact that you're having solar there, did that open up the opportunity for more grants, more funding?
Not necessarily. It is a benefit to the project in that we can speak about this as a net zero community, which is an incredible accomplishment for us as a whole. But no, not necessarily tied to any additional grants that I'm aware of.
Are there any other questions? Okay, Legislator Maloney, go ahead.
overall, I have a lot of concerns about the project. One being the lottery system. I was just speaking to a woman the other day that applied for apartment complex like this a year or two ago. There was something like, she gave an outrageous number, 53,000, I believe, for the number of people that were applying. So as we talk about our housing crisis, it's more about New York City's housing crisis, Buffalo's housing crisis. If we're talking about helping a housing crisis, our population in 2011, I'm looking, was 182,000. In 2023, it's 181,000. Seems migration, short-term rentals, weekenders have a lot more to do with what we should be attacking. I don't mind the money necessarily, the jail demo, the price of the land, $2 million in solar. I can live with that if it wasn't going to be a lottery, if you were going to pay your school taxes, if there's 50 or 60 kids coming up here. I know you have to guarantee yourself profits. That's what this whole thing is about. You know, you guys are running a major corporation, and you're not going to enter into something that you could take a loss on. So that's what all these numbers are about. I get that. But at the end of the day, we're going to move a bunch of people from out of town in through the lottery. We're not going to give our school district much money, and we're going to send a bunch of kids in there. And then on top of it, many of the individuals that move into those units that are subsidized have a salary cap on it and end up being evicted if they dare get a job or take extra hours. I'm dealing with constituents over in Saugerties that are going through that right now, being evicted because they got a raise. So at the end of the day, I don't see where we do much about our housing crisis here. We lose a lot of money. There's legacy costs, and we move people in from out of town. There was some recommendations, I believe, from the Kingston Water Department. I was wondering, I couldn't get a hold of that. I was wondering if you have that and what those recommendations are. I heard from certain people that they were pretty intense, some of the recommendations, but I haven't been able to get a hold of them. I was wondering if you had those and what they were. And if this falls through, this last $3 million, you said you were confident, but it doesn't mean it's guaranteed. We don't own the property. There's not a lot of reason to be here right now because we don't have a lot of say over everything except for future requests. Has there been discussions with the county about future requests of us filling that gap if, I think the three bullet points you had up there fell through? Is there something that we would be asked to do again?
Sure. I guess let me start with the water department. That was the first one that came to mind. I can tell you that a requirement of the city's site plan approval was that we come to terms with the water department to make sure that there's sufficient supply of water to the site to serve a community this size. I can tell you those discussions are still ongoing, but you know, we will have them in place prior to pulling our building
permit.
Were
there official recommendations made?
Yes, we were going back and forth on the number of solutions that could be enacted to ensure that the sufficient water supply is provided.
Can we get a copy of the original, what they originally put forth they wanted to see?
I'm not sure if I can disclose it. It was a city-issued report, but I can tell you that we are close to a solution and that will provide adequate water supply for the community.
I guess I could foil it. Okay. About the funding?
I can tell you that, again, of a project of this size, that gap is not something that scares us. This is a similar situation to pretty much all of our projects, which face a financial gap as we work towards closing, at which point all parties contribute towards solving that gap in some way or another. We haven't made any formal requests of the county to solve that gap.
I didn't ask about formal requests. Has there been initial discussions? Have there been anything talked about if that $3 million isn't able to be gotten in the way that was put up there for us? Has there been any discussions whatsoever,
We've identified all the different strategies to solve that financial gap. There are things within each party's control, and the state who finances these projects will require that each stakeholder in the deal contribute in some meaningful way. The county has already made significant contributions and investments in this project, which we recognize and greatly appreciate. That said, it is outside of my control if the state requests anything further of the county to close that financial gap. But given the size of that gap as it currently stands in relation to the project, we do feel confident in our ability to bring it to a close, hopefully without making any further requests.
Has there been discussions about the possibility? We're not, we've gone 2 years, we're way down this road, obviously. Nobody wants to, most people here don't want to let this die on the vine. What have the discussions been for that last $3 million if you're unable to get it and we need to help?
Sure. We've had multiple discussions about every resource that every stakeholder could bring to the deal, including the county. Right. And so we have had conversations about other things the county could do to further contribute to help with the financial feasibility of the project.
And what are those?
Specifically, one thing that comes immediately to mind is the purchase price paid for the land. If a seller's note was provided, that would immediately reduce the cost of the project and help solve
which
the financing
gap. Which
is
at a little under two, so just bringing that down would come directly off of that three.
That's
so that's
correct.
One discussion that's happened. Thank you. What, anything else?
Not that I'm aware of.
So that's the purchase price is the backup plan for those three bullet points, perhaps?
I wouldn't describe it as a backup plan. It's not something that we've requested recently. We've only identified it as a potential source as we seek to uncover every potential financing source to close the financing gap, which is our responsibility to do.
So if we
okay, give I'm going to pause this as a back and forth debate. Okay, well we're going to pause this as a back and forth debate. Is there anyone else, a legislator, that would like to speak? Okay, Legislator Stewart. Can you use your microphone, Legislator Stewart, just so, thank you.
Sorry about that. My question had to do with the lottery system and how people are selected to live in the facility. Kind of following up on what Legislator Maloney said, I'm a little concerned to hear that we're gonna be potentially housing people mm-hmm. from other parts of the state. It seems to me like we should be focusing on our own Ulster County residents for this project, and I was wondering if you could elaborate on that, please.
Yeah, no problem. This project is being financed in collaboration with the state's Housing and Community Renewal Office. They publish guidelines called Fair Housing Guidelines that are in line with the federal fair housing laws. We have to follow those to a T, which includes creating a lottery for every unit outside of those directly targeted to the community, for which we have 30% of these units already targeted to this local community, which are supportive housing units. That's 48 units that are going to be pulling from the local people staying in motels and emergency housing situations, going to be sourced by Michael Berg sitting right here. So in addition to that 30%, the other 70% will have to go through the lottery. I can't speak specifically about what percent of that 70% comes from Ulster County or will come from the immediate Kingston area. But I'll leave it at that, that we will follow the county, we'll follow the state's guidelines for lease-up, and we do believe that the vast majority of people who end up living here will become from the greater area here. And that has been our experience.
So you don't anticipate bringing people up from Manhattan or Westchester or over from
I can't rule it out. Anyone from the state can apply, but that wouldn't be my expectation on the whole.
Just to clarify, the housing lottery is a state-required program.
Yes.
It has nothing to do with this project in terms of its own mandate, to be clear.
And Mr. Berg, did you what, can you use the microphone, though, too? Yeah, thank you.
First, I want to say that the 48 units... Is it going?
First, I want to say that the 48 units that we would be directly responsible will come out of what is called coordinated entry, which requires that it be local. They have to have been listed in either the domestic violence coordinated entry system or in the regular coordinated entry system, all of which relate to people that have been in Ulster County. As far as the others go, I just want to say that I know that there was a reference to the need in the entire state, which is huge. But in June, Family of Woodstock placed 188 placements in motels after the county DSS had spent the entire day placing people in motels. The number that 100 more people, I want to tell you what I think that's about. It's about the fact that people that are working cannot find affordable housing or even close. And so when we look at the need of the community, this is the only project that is being designed for working people. If this doesn't happen, personally, our agency is really suffering trying to put people in housing. And this is really the only, the Quality Inn will serve permanent supported housing, which is also what we do, and we certainly won't speak against it. But the well-being of our community has to allow that people who can work here can live here. And this is the first and only project on the board to address that.
Thank you for that.
Okay. Are there any questions, other questions? Yes, Legislator Erner.
Thank you. Following up on the last part, so we have 30% units for supportive, that's 48 units, 70% going to the statewide lottery. And I also understand the city of Kingston in negotiating the pilot, the payment in lieu of taxes, the city pilot, has struck some deal where city of Kingston residents would also have some guarantee or preference. Can you comment on that?
Sure. A requirement of the pilot resolution passed by the Common Council was that the project abide by the city's new municipal preference policy for lease-up, which is currently under review by the state. And if it's put in place, then we will follow it.
If I could follow up on that.
Legislator Erner, are you finished? Okay. Legislator Maloney?
That's probably not going to, that's basically the city is asking the state to put their state mandates aside for the city of Kingston, so probably not going to happen. It was something the city of Kingston just put down as a request, so that will probably just be the same lottery we've been talking about. Are the developers taking personal income tax credits for energy producing or anything close to that?
I'm not familiar, no.
So there is precedent in the city of New York for a 50% community-based preference. That precedent exists. It is under review and it has been challenged.
If you could use your microphone.
And
if you could just
able,
repeat the answer.
The city is able.
Yeah, just to provide some additional color on this. So surrounding the lottery program. So in the city of New York, which also abides by a lottery, there is a precedent there for 50% community-based preference at lease up. That preference of 50% has been challenged most recently is, I think, 2018. But there are other communities that have that have precedent where it's 10 to 20% of local preference. And so, you know, we don't have no hope in terms of there being some exception made by the state to consider a local preference here. So I thought that was helpful. There's another question at the beginning of Legislator Maloney's commentary about eviction risk for income growth. You are not inherent to the federal low-income housing tax credit program, which this project is abiding, at risk of eviction in the event of your income going up. And so if you occupy one of these units, let's say it's 60% of AMI, your income could grow up as high as 140% of AMI, more than double your income. And even in that moment, you would not be in risk of eviction. Rather, the property would look to your unit as a market rate unit, and the next available unit that became available in the property would need to be more deeply rent skewed to deeper affordability. So it doesn't, unlike the Section 8 program, for instance, which has annual renewals, and if you exceed the income limitation for Section 8, you're no longer Section 8 eligible. The low-income housing tax credit program, the federal low-income housing tax credit program, does not work that way. Just for some clarity.
Thank you. Yes, Legislator Gavaris.
So I have a couple questions. The lottery, if you were to not take, how much is that actually worth in terms of the amount of money to this project? If you were to say, we're not going to do a lottery system, how much of the money actually disappears, approximately even?
It would totally change the nature of the project. It's an absolute requirement to conduct the lottery to work as an affordable housing project in the state of New York.
It's the $28 million on the slide that was the financing. That's the money
plus
that is
the bonds
coming in.
And the tax credits. So,
yeah, alternatively, you could do this project as a non-state funded program and sacrifice the $28 million. You would go through your IDA, they would issue volume cap tax exempt bonds to generate the 4% credit, and we would be talking about a 28 plus $3.1 million gap.
You'd lose the 28 and you'd lose the 24.
28 and 24. Mm-hmm. Second question, and this is more around the senior housing portion of it. Is this income-based or ability-to-pay-based? And if I need to clarify that, I can.
Yeah, I'm not sure I understand the definitions. I can tell you that it will be income-based housing. You will have to qualify the income initial to lease up, but you will not be evicted again if your income exceeds that.
So just some experience with senior housing, and I'm not saying that this is the majority of people, but there are some in senior housing, affordable senior housing projects that have no income, but if you looked at their financial statement, have a good amount of money in the bank with the ability to pay. Is this income-based or ability to pay?
So the question is, if you're rich in assets but you have no income, would you be eligible? And so in the event that you have no income, the stream that's coming on, the adjusted gross income qualification, it's a mouthful, that a household in that circumstance would go through would express that they are over income for the unit, right? And so they would need to be in a higher income band unit. They would look to the amount of assets in the bank and say, even if you annuitized your assets, you're not at risk of housing loss.
And this is more, I know you're a little far along on the design process, but elevator for EMS. I'm not sure if your design has already gotten there, but the ability to fit a stretcher into a senior housing elevator is greatly appreciated from somebody who's been 20 plus years in EMS. The three senior housing buildings that I have in my district, the elevators do not fit the stretchers. So just a comment.
That's a great point. Thank you for that.
Yep.
Legislator Nolan, you shook me off your card. Okay, Legislator Petit.
Thank you. I've been trying to formulate this question. This is a great project. I mean, it has everything that it needs as far as services go. Hopefully we'll have public access, daycare. The only thing that really isn't setting well is that you're here even though the county no longer owns the property. And we've been heavily invested in getting grant money and going to the city of Kingston to get the permits. And you are a $1 billion developer. To see that you're getting $10 million just to put this project together is really flooring me. So again, the concerns is how much more are you expecting from Ulster County? At what point should we be going out for bids on this then? Because we did transfer the property to an LDC, which went out for an RFP, but I was under the impression that the county was no longer liable. And once the project is up and going, since there's been significant state and federal and local money invested, how long will you be here? Or is this going to be a turnkey and flipped in 5 years for another, management company or whatever to come in?
Sure. I'll start with the last piece. We will not be leaving the property. We will be a part of the long-term ownership, long-term. It's a 30-year regulatory agreement. We'll be around. We will manage the property. We will own it. Our business plan is not to flip the property, include a sale in the short term. That is not how we do business. As for your earlier questions about making further requests of the county, it is in our interest not to do so, and we feel confident in being able to use the resources that we showed on the sheet in order to close that financing gap as we move forward. We hope not to approach you guys. Did I answer everything?
Legislator Nolan?
Well, I just say that the figure of $10 million is a roundup, and that the math on it is that that's a the developer's fee is 0.12 or 12% of this project.
Okay, Legislator Maloney, and we're going to, if anyone has, I just want to give everyone, make everyone aware of the time because there's other meetings scheduled, so we don't want to run too far into it. So I want everyone to have their questions answered, but I'm going to be keeping aware of that. Legislator Maloney.
I've seen recently a bunch of LLCs being, can you let us know, can we get a list of the members of these various LLCs that are being created?
Absolutely.
When can we get that?
Later today.
Okay. And do you have your own construction firm, the $51 million in construction costs?
We do not.
that'll be all hired out with no relationship to your own firm?
We've engaged a qualified third-party general contractor that will provide the construction services for the project.
Okay. Legislator Erner, was that a hand? Okay.
Thank you. During Dylan's presentation, I thought I heard some odd $200-something dollars per unit per year profit. Then I read the answers to my questions. It looks like 750. Is which of those figures is correct?
Sorry, then I said several hundred. I think it's 750 per unit per year, so roughly $62 a month.
Okay. Thank you for that. May I ask another question, Chair Bartels?
You may.
Okay, thank you. How did you determine how many of these apartments would be of each of the range of affordability?
Sure. So there are term sheets published by the state for different sorts of housing development. This is a partially supportive housing development. They provide guidelines on the income tiers that we abided by. But part of the overall program and the goal of the community from the start was to provide housing for those special populations, but also deeply affordable for seniors, and then a mix of workforce or moderate income housing for families. So we did our best to transmit those goals using the guidelines provided in the term sheets.
And I would say, generally speaking, the low-income housing tax credit program revolves around about an average weighted AMI across the whole your whole property, around 60%. And so you've got some broad discretion on how you can slice that up. The county has always maintained to be as deeply affordable as possible. And so that's why you see in Will's pie chart, like, a pretty heavy, you know, 30% AMI tier and then a pretty broad 80% AMI tier. Those two are kind of offsetting each other so that we can provide heavy depth of affordability but still maintain that 55 to 60% average AMI.
Legislator Criswell?
Yeah, what's your age bracket for seniors?
62.
62, thank you.
Okay. Legislator Maloney?
If the continued challenges continue and or you just don't get these gap sources, would you ever be willing to cut into this developer fee? Because that was in addition to the anticipated profits we just heard about.
Sure.
In the huge portfolio.
Yeah, like we referenced at the beginning, the state is really the gatekeeper here to closing, and they're going to demand that all stakeholders in the deal step up and contribute to solving any financial gap as we get closer to closing, something that we're willing to do to make this project happen.
So Will's not intentionally being coy, right? There's still a good deal of musical chairs. You touched on it a moment ago about, you know, retrofits and improvements to water infrastructure that on one day could range up to, was presented to me, at over $3 million, in addition to the $3 million that's on the page, down to a reasonable $250,000 to $300,000 for critical improvements. That's open. We have an HHAP application of $10 million, upwards of 15 if we get lucky. That's open. We've got a local preference policy for leasing, which in and of itself will add staff time, will create additional costs out there. Right? We need to get to a place where these musical chairs start to slow down and that like gap really, really, really becomes the $3 million. And that's where we get in the room and say, hey, we're not going to throw the baby out with the bathwater here. Right? We've been doing this for 2 years. We're millions of dollars into the project. We're committed to this project. What can we do?
It's going to follow up on the water.
Okay.
I was under the impression that it only passed the planning board in the city of Kingston with the stipulation that you did what the water department recommended, and now it sounds like their original recommendation has been whittled down and renegotiated, so we're not doing what the city of Kingston originally wanted done. As far as water infrastructure, and that's pretty much how this passed the planning board.
We presented a number of possible scenarios and options, which we've been working through since then. I wouldn't say it's been whittled down. I'd say we're all working collaboratively to find the right solution that doesn't create a real financial pressure for the project that could create an issue with us closing on financing. It's an ongoing discussion, and we're going to reach something that we all agree to with the city that provides adequate water supply, and I'd say we're very close.
Legislator Green?
Yeah, I want to go back to the question I had before and ask for the detail in writing. In other words, how much is coming off the rooftops? How much is coming off the ground mounted?
I wrote it down.
I didn't see it in the presentation.
Yeah, we don't have the full load. Will had talked about a 700 kilowatt system for the solar, which is designed to offset the load. So presumably it's about 700 kilowatts. We'll get back to you with the actual figures.
Okay. The last time it was a different project. The last time somebody said they would get back to me, they didn't. So I'm going to ask that you do.
Well, I'll give you my business card. You can call me if you don't hear from me in a few days.
And the other information I'd like added to that is what green building practices, Building Performance Institute, et cetera, and materials. Practices, materials, demand, supply.
We'd be happy to give you that information.
That would be great.
Absolutely.
Thank you.
Okay, legislator.
And it is a great project. I'm not minimizing that. I just don't want us to be greenwashing. I want us to really be doing what we say we're doing. Well, thank you.
Legislator Nolan with the last question.
Thank you. Yeah, I also am very grateful for this project. I think it's really needed, and I love the way that it's coming together. The question about the, you know, all the greening we can do, if you can look at the materials for the parking lots and the driveways, that's an increasing concern for us as a legislature, that it not be just asphalt as a default, but instead we may be able to use other materials that may provide better runoff and also be non-toxic for the environment or less toxic for the environment.
Greatly appreciate the comment. Thank you.
Okay, thank you so much for coming and presenting. If we will follow up and get the answers from you all to all the members, and we'll circulate it to everyone. And if anyone has any other questions, they can forward it through the clerk's office, and we'll get them to Penrose as well. I know we're running a few minutes behind on the next meeting, so I'll entertain
Madam
a motion.
Madam Chairwoman, I'll make a motion for adjournment.
Okay. Hello. Okay, all those in favor of adjournment? Meeting is adjourned. Thank you very much.